It is Smack Off Eve. Welcome to Smack Off Eve, the day before the day. I'm Jim Rome. This show is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Last hour, we had a conversation with Robbie Anderson, a wide receiver with the Panthers. I gave you the update on Kyrie Irving, Kendrick Perkins, KD. He was the third man in. I hit that at the top of the program. And we talked about all things Smack Off, and we'll continue to do so. It is your last chance to get through. Tomorrow is the big day. Tomorrow you do not get on the air unless you have an invite. Even if you have an invite, you may not get on the air. Telephone number is 1-800-636-8686. If you have a last-second RSVP, you better do it right now. If you have a last-second run at a golden ticket, you have to do that right now. I also mentioned there is a long-form piece about the Smack Off and the callers to the Smack Off on the BigLead.com. BigLead.com. Great piece. Long-form piece. I've got that on my Twitter feed if you want to find it and read it. Lots of guys who have won the Smack Off are interviewed for that piece. People who work on the show, people who used to work on the show, also interviewed for the piece by Kyle Koster. It's a great read. It's a really interesting read. So if you want to properly get yourself prepared for tomorrow, that's another good way to do it. Also, one more thing about tomorrow. When you're tweeting about it, and you definitely want to tweet about it, I'll direct you to TweetDeck one more time a little bit later on. But if you tweet about the Smack Off, we're going with a very simple hashtag tomorrow, Smack Off. Hashtag Smack Off. Not hashtag Smack Off 26. Not hashtag The Smack Off. No Roman numerals. No number. Just Smack Off. Hashtag Smack Off. In fact, get some reps in right now. Practice right now. I did it earlier myself. Go to Twitter. Just hit it. Hashtag Smack Off. I've got thoughts on the conversation I had with Daniel Cormier, which is awesome. Episode 134 of the Jim Rome Podcast. I will get there in a minute. But as I mentioned, since it is your last time to call before the actual event, let's roll a telephone call or two or more. We go to Sacramento. Stoney, good to have you, Stoney. What's up?
Jimmy. Oh, my goodness. I am so excited for tomorrow. Brad and Corona is going to go down like the Titanic. Iceberg dead ahead. I'm going with my narc bra in Huntington. I got to tell you, us guys up here in NorCal, just great, getting ready for harvest for the indoor, talking to my good man Hawk right there, told him, you know something, man? We got sponges up here ready to roll, man. We are ready to roll for this Smack Off. I really enjoyed the fact that you brought back all the OGs from way back in the brick, dude. Talk about being able to go old school on him. That was phenomenal. This has been some epic radio for the last week, Jimmy. I got to tell you, I've had a difficult time just putting it down and going to use the can so I don't miss anything. You've done way past what it is that we thought you'd be able to do. And I got to tell you, it's all due to you, your staff, and the clones. The clones love you. The clones want to represent. But more than that, we want to be able to make this radio station the best radio program aboard. I'm going with Narc Bra. I'm going against the odds. Put my money on it. See ya.
Nice job, Stoney. Appreciate you. Thank you so much. He's taking the NARC over the BIC. NARC bra over the BIC. Bruh. I really appreciate what he said. He said, you've done way better than we even expected you to do during this period. And it's because of you, the XR4TI, and the clones. All true. That's all true. And I appreciate you saying that. That's a nice compliment. 1-800-636-8686. It is Smack Off Eve. It is the day before the day. You know, I got to be honest. I'm always about the day. I'm always about the thing right in front of me. Because when you do a radio program, and I've always said this for the record, no matter how good or bad that show is, you always go back to zero the very next day. Like, I could do the best show ever today, and it won't matter tomorrow. Do it again. What have you done for me lately? I could have the worst show ever, and it really doesn't matter per se, because I have another opportunity tomorrow. That's the beauty of doing a daily talk show. You go back to zero every single day. You might have some goodwill in the bank. You might be able to withdraw that goodwill at some point if you need it. But mostly you go back to zero every single day. Having said all that, I did step back from it yesterday. And I started thinking about the Smack Off. 26. 26 Smack Offs. You know, that's not like one of those things where you talk about seasons in television. We have 26 seasons, but it's not 26 years. It's 26 seasons. We do this once a year. This is Smack Off 26. It's a big number. I'm proud of that number. And what I'm most proud of is not only are we still going 26 deep, This might be the best one ever. It's as strong now as it has ever been, and we are the day before the day. Let's go to Studio City, the 818, Beaks, on Smack Off Eve. What's going on, Beaks? How are you?
Good, man. How you doing?
Great.
So, well, based on what happened at Hennessy's last year, you now apparently win more than the 5K. You get a drunken Fabian leaping on top of your shoulders, along with Lewis and Palmdale's bionic legs. So have fun with that, guys. And it's so recently Mark in Boston gave me some advice about going back home. Mark, I just wish I could give you some advice about repeating as a smack off champ, but out of the 1,000 times you've smacked off, you've never won Schleprock. So Jim, last year I had a who wants to not walk with Jeff and Richmond list. This year I have one addition, but it's a who wants to walk on Jeff and Richmond. And the answer is any pro wrestlers that need a mat. Now, moving on to Jeff and Southfield, I just have a question. If I got cast as Jabba's in Star Wars, does that mean that Bella B is the Rancor in the pit? Unwar any rookie tips Jerome in Houston has been giving out? Hey, Jerome, I have a tip for you. It's
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Beaks. Man, you are the train wreck that I cannot take my eyes off of. If it were anybody other than you and any other call other than that call, it would have got run like 5 minutes earlier. But it was so bad that I just wanted to listen to it. And it was getting worse and worse and worse. That's why you're on the day before the day and not the actual day. Got that, Schleprock?
You've never won, Schleprock.
Yeah, Schleprock. How's that taste? Schleprock?
Schleprock?
Hey, Schleprock, tell me how my ass tastes.
Schleprock?
Beaks. Kind of reminds me of like what I said about Jay Stu. If you're going to go in and tell everybody how horrible they are as callers, then you better be a good caller. And that was not a good call. That was a bad call. But I'm trying to get you in here the day before the day. Smack Off Eve, 1-800-636-8686. Hey, Mark, I bet Beaks is in your head now. I wonder if that's going to affect him tomorrow. Got that, Schleprock?
Schleprock.
Back to the phones. Got a great interview coming up next segment with Eric Orsi, New York Met draft pick. All right, let's go this time to British Columbia. Jeff. You are next. Hey, Jeff, how are you?
Doing well, Jim. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm that Canadian who sang the American National Anthem, but with Sonny and Cher in Toronto out of the mix and Tyler and Edmund Chuck gone, I want to pump up my boy in Vancouver, even though he does have a snowball's chance in Mexico winning the Great American Smack-Off. Matt, back in 94 in Pacific Beach, I used to stand around in a telephone booth with a transistor radio trying to get my lame drug test takes on the air. And Matt, you have the weight of all of Canada on your shoulders. If you can podium tomorrow, it's a win for us. Heck, if you can make top 10, we're going to be walking on air. So, channel your inner Gretzky or your inner Sidney Crosby. Okay? Oh, Canada. Peace. Out.
Peace. I mentioned yesterday, he not only has the weight of all of Canada on him, he has the weight of much of the U.S. on him as well, who wants him to fail. Matt in Vancouver. Good thing homeboy's got broad shoulders. He's got a lot on his back right now. He's done it 3 times. He's only made the top 10 once. If Matt comes in tomorrow and can't crack the top 10, then we're talking about an all-time smack-off underachiever. And I hate to hit that guy with that because I like that guy a lot. But given the success he's had in the mornings, on the regular show, during the regular season, my man's got to step up in the postseason. I'm not saying he has to win it. I'm not even saying he's got to hit the board. I'm saying he sure as hell better make the top 10, and top 5 would be a much better idea. Let's see if it happens. He mentioned PB. PB is Pacific Beach. When I got my first big break at 690 in the year 1990, that's where I moved to, Pacific Beach. Awesome, awesome beach community. So I know exactly what that guy's talking about and where he was. Banging telephone calls. Speak of the devil. Beek said, not only if you went to Hennessy's last year, not only do you win $5,000, you also win Fabian. And there he is. Let's go to Los Angeles. It is the day before the day. It's Smack Off Eve. Fabian, how are you?
Good morning, bro. Honestly, good thing that dude from Canada called or something, because I couldn't stop laughing. I don't know why, because I was hearing the program, I think, or something like that. Yeah, my stomach kind of hurts a little bit. I'm done, bro. Okay, so anyways, the purpose of the call, I guess, you know what? I think Steve Stugnut, he is got to be the biggest clone. Really? Oh, man, I lost my thought, man. I want to take a puff and the drinking and the whole deal. Bro, one thing. Tomorrow my money's still... I ain't got no money, by the way. So, that we got a problem, Houston. So, my money's still on Brad, eh? You know, and let me know who the, you know, where to go for I could go hang around. Like, so, hey, happy, did I already say, you know, like, when it's like New Year's Eve or whatever, Smack Off Eve, all those in the morning, right? Dude, I think I'm going to have to go puff. I want to say that Hanstrom, Bacon, and Pool Dog, and Steve Stugnut, they're the best in the business. Tonight, listen to the program. I think tonight is the pre.
Hey, Fabian.
No.
You don't like that car.
I don't like that
car. All right, so I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing.
Not a very good car.
But I know it's a thing. The thing being, you can't get that anywhere else but here. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Oh, you know what? No.
That. You cannot get that anywhere else but here. Whatever that was. Neep.
Neep.
Fabian, my man, I'm not saying you have to make sense. I am saying you have to get through the entire phone call without dropping an F-bomb. That's mandatory. That does not work here. Neep. Fabian's looking for a place to hang out. Last year they had that big party at Hennessy's, and Fabian took full advantage of that. And now he's like, where am I going to be? Where am I going to go? I don't know the answer to that. We're social distancing still yet. Believe it or not, the virus, it's still out there, and it's still killing people. You still need to be careful. So notice I've not talked about the watch parties. There aren't watch parties. You need to create your own socially responsible watch party. Like I said, you don't get that anywhere but here. I don't know if that's good or bad.
Oh, you know what? No.
Yeah. Now you're done. Here is an RSVP.
Now I'm done.
This guy's going to be a factor tomorrow. I don't want to bias it because I am ultimately the judge, and I decide who wins and who doesn't. However, I've got a feeling, based on this guy's track record, I know his skill set, I think he's going to be a factor tomorrow. We go to Benny in Wisco. Benny, it's the day out. How do you feel?
I feel good, man. You know, there have been a lot of good times that I've had calling this show, but I think hearing Fabian just drop an F-bomb live on hold might be my favorite. That was absolutely incredible. But, yeah, I'm... You know what's not incredible is this little back and forth between Lef and Brad. Lef poking the bear and Brad calling Lef gimmicky. Now, correct me if I'm wrong here, but haven't we heard this before, like for the past 5 years straight? I mean, can you guys just turn the page already? This pillow fight is the radio version of Teen Wolf 2. Mike and Indy and Chael Sonnen think that Lef v. Brad is a sequel that nobody asked for. With the exception of the person holding the bucket underneath Rick and Buffalo's beehole during his call tomorrow, nobody has time for that crap. Now, Jim, yeah, I'm really pumped for tomorrow. I'll be there. And I'm going to let my competition take care of the tactical errors this time around. And based on what I've heard or not heard from the rest of the field, it's going to be an easy job. Easier than Rick and Buffalo's teaching job once the pandemic hit. an even easier a job than the guy who tested Owen Wilson and Patrick Ewing for COVID. I mean, did that guy just stand 6 feet away and light a match and say, oh yeah, you guys got it. 2 weeks isolation, bud. Thanks, Jim. I cannot wait to crush some skulls tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Benny. Rack him. That's a strong RSVP. Benny said, I've had some good times, I've had some fun times, but nothing's better than waiting on hold and hearing Fabian drop an F-bomb. That's true. We dumped it, but if you're on hold, when we dump something, you hear it. When you're on hold, you hear everything that we hear that nobody else hears. So he got that. He heard it. Benny and Wisco with the RSVP. He will be there tomorrow. Anybody else in the field who has not RSVP'd that needs to or wants to, do it now. 1-800-636-8686. When we come back, a conversation with New York Mets draft pick Eric Orsi. Then more of your telephone calls. Dan Wojcicki at the top of hour number three. When your battery goes dead, everything could come to a stop. Do not take a chance on getting stranded. O'Reilly Auto Parts will test your battery free of charge. If your battery needs to be replaced, the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts can help you find the exact battery that fits your car or your truck, and you'll get it at a guaranteed low price. Keep your car on the road by getting your battery tested for free at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Or when you need auto parts fast, O'ReillyAuto.com is only a few clicks away. They offer convenient options for you to get your parts quickly. Order online at O'ReillyAuto.com. Pick up for free at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store if you want. They'll even bring it to you curbside. Or you can choose to have your parts delivered right to your door with free shipping on most orders over $35. Get your auto parts quickly with O'Reilly Auto Parts. Visit O'ReillyAuto.com. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back. A very good Thursday to you in Southern California. I am Jim Rome. More telephone calls coming up momentarily. But as promised, we are joined right now by a former University of New Orleans pitcher. 3-0 on the year, 2.75 ERA. He struck out 29 batters in just over 19 innings. He was an LSWA Pitcher of the Week in March and a fifth-round draft pick of the Mets this year. We are joined by Eric Orsi. Eric, it's really nice to have you on the program. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. It's good to have you. Listen, it's been a couple of weeks, or I should say a couple of days, since you've been drafted. What have the last few days been like for you and your family?
Oh, they've been pretty chaotic, but they've been amazing. Just constant running around, having people stop by, congratulate me, and constant phone calls and text messages. But it's been awesome. It's been really exciting.
I mean, Eric, your story really is amazing, and we'll get into it in a minute. But if you were to take me back, when did you first start playing baseball, and what was it about the game that you liked so much?
I've been playing baseball since as early as I can remember. Since I was old enough to pretty much walk, I believe I've been playing. And just the passion for the game really came from my dad. Just always, he grew up playing and he loved it. And he kind of shared that love of the game with me. And, just everything about it, I really enjoyed and just the competitive nature of it. And for me, it was always the pitching side of it that I always loved. Whatever it was about getting guys out on the mound, I just absolutely fell in love with.
Eric Orsi is joining us. So you played your high school ball at Glenbard North in Illinois. Then you went to Northwest Florida State. So at that point, what was your plan and what kind of hopes did you have for a baseball future?
I just wanted to play at the next level, whether that be Division I or, professional baseball, obviously. I'd worked pretty hard my whole life to try and get to that level. And I started realizing that I had a talent and an ability that would allow me to get to that next level, and obviously enjoying the game as much as I did growing up, and continuing to be given the opportunity to play at that next level was something I could never even dream of having in front of me. So, I mean, it just means the world to me that it's actually here, and this opportunity was even given to me in the first place.
especially given what you've been through. He was a fifth-round draft pick of the Mets in this year's draft. Eric Orsi is my guest. So just to continue with that story, though, you transferred to the University of New Orleans, and then in 2018, you were dealing with some groin pain. The story goes that initially you thought it might have been from doing some extra work as a catcher, and then you fight through it, you keep battling, but then one morning you wake up and you're in agony. What do you remember about that particular morning?
Not being able to move or really breathe too well. That was, it was pretty scary. It was about 4:30 in the morning. And, I mean, I'm normally a pretty heavy sleeper. So the fact that I was up was kind of already a red flag. And then obviously once I tried to get up and move around a little bit and was struggling with pain, I knew something was wrong. Obviously at that point, go to the hospital and had some tests done and find out, being diagnosed with cancer. That was, something at 21 years old, you never really expect to hear. But I mean, honestly, for the most part, pretty much once I was diagnosed, it took me a couple hours to get over it. I shared it with my family, and by the time my coaches had showed up to the hospital and were kind of asking how everything was going, I was ready to get it over with and get the surgeries done and take the first couple steps at putting it behind me.
I mean, there's so much in that answer that's amazing to me, Eric. For instance, as you point out, I mean, you're a young athlete. You're a Division I college athlete. You're in great shape. You're young. I mean, what goes through your mind when you're told that you have testicular cancer? Did that even register when you first heard that?
Honestly, not at all. I tell people this all the time. I actually laughed at the doctor when he said I had cancer because I didn't think it was even an option. So that those first, like, probably I would say 5 minutes, it hadn't really sunk in. And then I just remember... We started talking about treatments and what the next step was to get rid of it. And I remember looking down at my hands and they just started shaking a little bit. And I could just feel that emotion start to come over my body. And I knew I was about to lose it. I cried like a baby for probably probably hour almost. So that was a couple moments I'll never forget. Specifically, though, I remember looking down at my right hand, and it just started shaking. I was like, "Uh-oh, I'm about to just lose it right here."
Eric Orsi is joining us. Eric, the other thing is too, like, you didn't have family with you when you got that message. In fact, you were the one who had to call your mom and tell her the news. What was that telephone call like?
That was definitely probably the hardest thing I've had to do. That was, knowing, especially being away from home and. My mom is very, very protective, as most moms are. I knew it was going to be tough for her to hear, so that phone call was very difficult. And she knew something was wrong as well from the beginning. She knew the number was not mine, and she knew it wasn't the coach's numbers, and it wasn't a number from the school. She kind of got that feeling. You know, that tone kind of starts from the second night she answers the phone and says, you know, hello, and I'm saying, hey, it's your son. You know, it's Eric, and... from the get-go, she could kind of just tell from my voice that something was wrong, and that just made it that much harder. I was trying to hold back the emotions just for her sake more than anything, but, obviously those emotions kind of came through on the phone call, and you can kind of hear her. She didn't really know how to react. I know she, after I had told her for the first time that I had cancer, she actually was like, you know what, I need to go find your father because he works 10 minutes down the road, and I don't know what to do right now. I'll call you back in 10 minutes when I find your father. So she actually drove over to his work, and they called me back. And then I obviously shared that with both of them. And that was a pretty emotional and a pretty emotional phone call.
Pitcher Eric Orsi is joining us. I mean, the whole thing is just terrifying. So at what point did you start your thinking? When did it shift from the shock of the news to determining, all right, this is what this is. What are we going to do about it? How are we going to beat this thing? When did you start to get leverage on this?
It was probably a couple hours after they had told me.
Wow.
Like I said, my coaches were on their way to the hospital, and by the time they showed up, it had been, I would probably say, an hour or two since I had been diagnosed, and they'd run all the tests and all that. And by the time they showed up, they walked through the door and were like, hey, how's it going? Like, how you doing? And just seeing their faces, it was kind of like, you know what? Like, I'm good. I'm actually as good as I can be. Obviously not good, but as good as I can be. I'm ready to kind of tackle this obstacle head on, and let's get this out of me.
So you start to go about doing that. You have surgery, but then you ask your coach, Blake Dean, if you could travel with the team to the Southland Conference Baseball Tourney. I mean, at that point, Eric, you were still having trouble walking to a certain extent. Why was it so important for you to be with your team?
For me, it was just the brotherhood that we had that year, and we had a really good group of guys, and we were kind of on a roll that last little bit of the year. We were really just on a mission. We started out that year pretty poorly, and we were just coming in hot at the end, making that playoff push to really get in there, and I didn't want to be the reason that people got distracted and we didn't end up making it. So I wanted to make it about the team and make sure that I was there for the guys. And they supported me a ton, and we almost kind of rallied around the fact that I wasn't going to be able to play the rest of the year and help us out. And we made a good little run right there. We made it to the championship game of that tournament. And on top of that as well, it was somewhat of a distraction for me. I mean, baseball has always been what I fall back on when life's hard or when I'm struggling with something in life. Baseball had always been there to kind of take my mind off of it and just allowed me to enjoy whatever part of life I was going through. So it was amazing that Coach Dean even allowed me to go, and I really appreciated all the brotherhood and all the support from the guys.
See, Eric, I want to be respectful of your time, but I just want to mention this as well, and I should normally spend more time on this, but the fact is there was a mole on your back, tests are run, and then you're diagnosed with skin cancer. So then it's a second diagnosis, but in the middle of this, you continue to battle, you continue to work, you're putting the time in. As you were working your way back into baseball, was it fairly smooth, or was it all just a grind?
It was a little bit of both. I mean, for me, I'd always worked pretty hard, I felt like, so the work ethic part of it was always there for me. So once I was cleared to start moving around and working out and doing all that, I didn't find it too difficult to get back into it. I mean, obviously the recovery time that my body had been so beat up that one workout felt like I had, you know, worked out for a week straight without stopping. So the recovery time after workouts or throwing or any of that was obviously a little bit harder. But I mean, for the most part, everybody was there to support me, and anything I needed, any kind of help I needed, any treatment I needed, there was always somebody there willing to help, and it made it a lot easier for me. I know the physical toll on my body, like I said, the recovery time was probably a little bit longer, but for the most part, anything I needed, any help I needed, any treatment I needed, there was always somebody there just waiting to help out, and I mean, that meant the world to me.
Eric Orsi is joining us for a few more moments. So you fight all the way back. You make it back to the mound in the season opener against Southern. You pitch an inning and two-thirds. You fight through that. Then against Arkansas State, you go five innings. You strike out seven. You get your first win since beating cancer. What did that moment feel like?
Honestly, it kind of came and went really quick. I didn't even really pay attention to the fact that had been my first win at the Division I level, and I hadn't even really paid attention that was the first win since I had been back since cancer. At that point, it was just an excitement to be back in the game, and we had a good ball club this year. Obviously, without COVID, I think we're making a pretty good run this year, and I think we're one of the top teams in the Southland. So that was more of our focus this year was, you know what, I want this to be my last year of college ball. I want to go out on top, and I want to have a good season. And we had a great group of guys to do that. So the focus really wasn't on those individual moments for me. It was about just doing everything I could to help the team win and see how successful we could be this year.
Really importantly, you said something amazing also. Quote, "It sounds crazy and it sounds bizarre, but cancer was a blessing in disguise for sure." End quote. It's a really powerful statement. What do you mean by that?
It just kind of opened my eyes to what's really important in life and what I wanted to do. It helped me realize that, I mean, I feel like I'm a good person, but I wasn't necessarily the exact person I wanted to be. And the same thing with baseball. I was a good baseball player, but I wasn't the elite, great guy that I wanted to be in terms of baseball either. So it kind of just opened my eyes to the fact that I needed to improve myself both on and off the field, and you know, just kind of relit that fire inside me saying, you know what, if you really want to play at the next level and you really want to do this as a profession and you want to do this as a job, you really got to dive into it, learn more, work harder, and push other people around you. And as long as you continue to do that, you keep your nose to the ground and keep working, That opportunity will be there at some point.
Eric Orszay, it's an absolutely amazing story. Former University of New Orleans pitcher, drafted by the New York Mets in the fifth round of this year's draft. Eric, there's no way to do justice to your journey and your story, but I really appreciate you taking time, and we're doing the best we can with it. I mean, that is an amazing story, and you're an amazing young man. I really appreciate having you on the show. We'll all be watching to see how it plays out, and nice to talk to you.
Thank you very much, Jim. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Awesome conversation, Eric. Appreciate you. Good luck. I'll be tracking that closely. Eric Orszay, 3-0, 2.75 ERA in the season, diagnosed with testicular cancer, then skin cancer, pushes through, fights through, beats it back, drafted by the Mets in the fifth round. Amazing young guy. All right, we'll take a short time out. When we come back, phone lines are open. It is the day before the day, and I want your thoughts on Eric for sure. 1-800-636-8686. First up, I got a sports update for you. Here is the very latest on this Thursday.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
All right, my thanks to Eric Orszay. He's an amazing young guy, an amazing young person. 2020 New York Mets draft pick, and great to have him on the show. I've got Dan Wojcicki coming up at the top of the hour. And you've got your telephone number, which is toll-free. It is the day before the day. It is Smack Off Eve. Tomorrow is the big day, Smack Off 26, the best of the best. Even if you're invited, it does not guarantee you'll get on the air. We already had an RSVP from Benny in Wisco, who called out both Brad and Lev. Who's the one to beat tomorrow? Obviously, it's Brad. That doesn't mean that he can't be beaten. He is the one to beat, though. 1-800-636-8686. This guy is in the field. Maybe he's looking for a last-second setup or an RSVP. Let's find out. We go to Las Vegas. It's Cal in Vegas. Hey, Cal, how are you?
Good, Jim. I wanted to echo that Canadian who said Matt has a lot of weight on top of him. I mean, with Caleb and Cabanasian alone, I get scoliosis just thinking about it. There's so much weight on his shoulders, we should call him Matless in Van. And one more thing, you might call it Canada, Matt, but the rest of the world calls it Canada. You big doofus, you can't win. Thank you.
That's not Cal.
No.
You don't like that. That's the fake Cal in Vegas. Yeah, I know, clones. The fake Cal is way better than the regular Cal. I know. That's something the jungle doesn't need. People pretending to be other clones. Now we have a fake Silk, a fake Silk, and a fake Cal in Vegas.
Come on.
Have I not given you a good show? Stop bringing me down. Come on. Do better. Be better. Do better. I'm giving you good takes, good rants, good interviews, good phone calls, and then that. Man, do better. Stop bringing me down.
Step your game up.
1-800-636-8686. All right, so if you've been watching or if you've been craving live sports, Dana White and the UFC are here for you, and they have been. Not only were they the first ones back, but the UFC has some great cards on tap, including the trilogy fight coming up on August 15th. Between Stipe and my podcast guest this week, DC, Daniel Cormier. Now, DC is as good of a dude as he is a fighter. And he's on everybody's short list as one of the best pound-for-pound fighters to ever step into the cage. Arguably the greatest heavyweight ever. He'll have a chance to prove that once again in his trilogy fight with Stipe. Not only is he a former double champ, a champ, he is the only male fighter in UFC history to successfully defend his two belts at the same time. Now, both those straps are gone, but this summer he's going to have a chance against Stipe to rip back the heavyweight title and then go out on top and retire a champion. The first time these guys fought, DC ran right through Stipe and knocked him out in the first round. The second time around, it was more of the same. DC was in control. He was ragdolling Stipe. Except Stipe made the necessary adjustments, like the best of the best do. DC admittedly gassed out mentally, waiting and looking for a second KO that never came. And it ended up costing him in a big way. He's not the first one to have this happen to, but one of the only ones who has completely owned it and been accountable for it. I talked to a lot of athletes after a tough performance. Very few show up the way Daniel Cormier did yesterday in talking about that loss.
The reality is, I was way out ahead in that fight. When you let one slip through your fingers like that, man, it's hard to deal with. It is a hard truth when you got to look at yourself in the mirror and say that you dropped the ball not only competitively but mentally. And mentally, I messed up, man. I stopped respecting who may be the greatest heavyweight of all time, and that cost me. And that's my fault. And I deserve to lose on that night because I didn't show that dangerous man the respect that he deserves. And honestly, it was from winning in the way that I did in the first fight and also being ahead in the second fight that time, you know. So, yeah, I lost respect and ultimately it cost me.
I'm not sure I've ever heard an athlete, a world-class athlete, an elite athlete, own something the way he just did. I mean, I could not respect Daniel Cormier any more than I do. I couldn't like him any more than I do, and especially more so after hearing him explain that the way he did. You heard him say it. He stopped respecting Stipe, and it cost him the fight. And now he's got to live with that forever. He was in control, but he fell in love with the knockout and his striking game, and it was a knockout that just was not going to come. He let Stipe back in. Stipe did what he does best. He took advantage. He made the necessary adjustments. So now DC has to adjust back to Stipe. I asked him, what is going to be different this time around when they have that third fight in August?
I think it's going to be a tough fight. I just need to go out there and fight my fight. You know, when you watch Stipe and I fight, and to this point we fought five rounds. He won the fourth round of our second fight, you know, and even in that round, it was still pretty close. In five rounds, I've won four of those rounds. So I just need to put together 25 minutes to get my hand raised. But it just ends with me winning. That's the only way that this fight ends. The first time I knocked him out, so I was almost in love with it. So I chased it so bad. I'm swinging every punch from the hip. I'm like, it's like I'm street fighting. No wonder I got exhausted. The street fight lasts 25 seconds. I'm in there for 20 minutes. So I just really have to let go of the idea that I'm going to knock this guy out and just be okay with winning in any way that I can.
All right, so if you were looking for him to call a knockout, that's not happening. He just wants, you get the sense that DC just wants to make sure that physically and even more importantly, mentally, he is ready for all 25 minutes. And if he gets beat by the better man, so be it. But make sure that he's ready to fight emotionally, physically, and mentally for all 25 minutes. And although he is fighting still at a very high level, and there are a number of other fights out there for him, DC does insist this is it. This is going to be his last fight, and he's looking to go out on his own terms and on top with that strap. I asked him, though, what he thought it would be like to retire in an empty arena.
I think that's the world we live in today, Jim. You know, I mean, obviously you would love to be fighting in front of all the fans. My whole career has been main events and co-main events, and every time you're in that spot, there's 15,000 people in the arena. I've never fought in front of no people, but I'll be okay with it. The only fight I was ever not on the pay-per-view was my very first fight, and that was one of the first five fights on Fox. So it was a very massive audience, and it was in San Jose, so the place was packed. I've never fought in front of a small crowd of people since I got to the UFC. So it will be different, but I don't anticipate it's going to change anything that happens in the fight.
In other words, I don't think that he's really concerned about anybody other than the guy standing right in front of him. He's hyper-focused on Stipe and Stipe alone and the opportunity and a chance to make this right after what happened last time out. DC also told me how much he's adjusted his training and his rest and his recovery to prepare to finish the fight this time with his hand in the air and the belt around his waist. Now, of course, when you talk to Daniel Cormier or you think about DC, it's impossible to do so without bringing up John Jones, because their rivalry is not just one of the best in sports history, it's also one of the strangest. It's one of the most bizarre. And all because of John Jones, and not in any way because of DC. Let me lay this out very quickly for those of you who may have forgotten. 2014, UFC 178. Jones and Cormier are scheduled to headline a fight that never goes off because of a Jones leg injury. That'll happen. but it was memorable for a reason which I'll get to in a second. 2015, UFC 182. Jones beats Cormier by decision, but has a test come back positive for cocaine that he had taken before the main event. 2016, UFC 200. Jones fails a PED test. 2 days before his rematch against Cormier, Cormier is devastated. 2017, UFC 214. Jones knocks out Cormier in the third round before failing a drug test after the fight, this time for PEDs. Like, these are two of the best to ever do it. Their rivalry, though, will always be tainted because of the things that Jones was doing outside the cage. DC told me in this conversation, he feels like he never really did get to fight this guy on a level playing field. Now, going back to 2014, I mentioned it being memorable. That's because Jones and Cormier got into a massive brawl in the MGM lobby at the pre-fight face-off. Then there was this amazing back and forth during a commercial break on SportsCenter. Let me play for you right now, but keep in mind, when you hear this, these guys are separate. They're in different rooms, but they're both connected on the same interview line. Jones asked through his headset if Cormier can hear him. This is during a commercial break. Neither of them can see each other, and it's off air. Listen to this.
Hey, are you still there?
I'm here.
You are just the fakest person. I actually admire that you can actually be this fake in, like, when the TV comes on, how you can just change. It's like you're a chameleon.
Hey, listen,
it's awesome.
I'm a professional.
It's unbelievable.
The fact that you're a hasn't changed.
It's unbelievable how fake you can really be. Like, you are just such a my God. It is amazing. But you know what? Hats off to you. You got a great PR person. Because they do a great job with training you, because you are just terrible. You're the scum of the earth. You are a terrible human being, but you can sure turn it on, huh?
Thank you.
I wish they would let me next door so I can spit in your face.
You know I would absolutely kill you if you ever did something like that,
right? You could never kill me.
Oh, I bet you I could.
Then you should try, John. You really should try, John.
No, I would literally kill you if you spit in my face.
You kill me, John?
That is mind-blowing. I mean, that's mind-blowing. That's an exchange the two of these guys had over a phone line or a broadcast line. Absolutely amazing. And I stand by what I said. DC is like the best guy ever. And that's why it's so incredible to hear him talk like that and the disdain he has for John Jones. I want to finish that thought. And we got into whether or not they'd fight again. That is an unbelievable exchange. Daniel Cormier, if you need him. He's going to fight Stipe in August. I'll finish that thought when we come back.